To WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The right of U.S. workers to organize was dealt a major blow today as the National Labor Relations Board ruled temporary workers will no longer be able to collectively bargain with their permanent status co-workers. The three Bush-appointed NLRB members argued that temporary employees are different than permanent workers. The two dissenting board members said this essentially puts the right to collectively bargain in the employer's hands, excluding a growing temp workforce from the benefits of union representation. The 2.5 million temp workers in the U.S. will now only be allowed to organize if both their temporary agency and the company where they work approve, something that union organizers believe is almost impossible to achieve.
Florida, no. Wisconsin, yes. We're sick of paying more for less.
About 250, mostly union demonstrators, gathered at Wisconsin's State Elections Board to protest a $12 million contract with Accenture. That's the corporation that handled Florida's botched felon voter purge list. This contract is to develop a voter registration list for Wisconsin. Carol Wydell is a Wisconsin state employee and one of the protest organizers. She says one union has already filed a formal appeal against this Accenture contract.
One union, the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council, has filed an appeal of that contract. I think the legislature needs to pay attention to the fact that they have allowed agencies to sign these contracts, but you don't sign a contract for millions of dollars without even ever once taking into account, is it cheaper? Is it better? They never even ask that question.
Jim Cavanaugh of Wisconsin's South Central Labor Federation says state workers can do this work and Wisconsin should not use Accenture to privatize its voter list.
Well, we're out here today to protest, number one, this exorbitant contract with a company that has a questionable reputation, but also the whole process by which the state tends to contract out work while at the same time they are cutting back state employees who could do that same work much more inexpensively.
Phyllis Hasbrook of the No Stolen Elections Coalition told the protesters that turning over state voter lists to Accenture endangers democracy.
We're especially concerned with the way that computer systems could be used and have been used for electoral fraud. We will not accept this attempt to privatize our elections.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The steep rise in health care costs is making more and more Americans turn down benefits. Barely half of the employees who are offered employer-based health care plans opt to buy in. Economists blame the decrease on the trend of shifting more and more costs to the worker. In 1999, employees paid on average $169 per month for family coverage. Now they pay on average $464 per month.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by Billionaires for Bush.
Don't do it. Don't even think about it. The IT is giving up on America and moving to Canada or wherever. Some progressives, bemoaning both the tone and result of the presidential election, wail that they no longer recognize their country and can't stand the thought of enduring four more years of W. How could the American people have elected this smirking son of privilege, they ask incredulously. Extremist preachers are turning our richly diverse democracy into a narrow-minded theocracy, they cry. We can't live in a country that pushes a deadly war of lies in our names, they say, as they review travel brochures and talk about skedaddling. In the 2 days following the election, the website of the Canadian Immigration Agency had more than 250,000 hits from the U.S. The interest is high enough that an immigration lawyer from Vancouver has scheduled How to Move to Canada seminars in three American cities next month, all in blue states. Come on, folks, get a grip. I understand the impulse, and other lands certainly have their pluses, but this is America, a land of incomparable possibilities. It's our home, our big family, and you don't walk away from something so special just because we've hit an ugly patch. We've had plenty of ugly patches in America's brawling history. Cotton Mather, slavery, Civil War, the suppression of women, the robber barons, Jim Crow, violence against labor, Joe McCarthy. What if progressive forces in these times had just cut and run? Besides, it's not like the entire population has suddenly become right-wing crazed zealots and you're all alone. Remember, 49% of us voted against the Bushites, vehemently opposing where they're trying to take our America. We're strong and getting stronger. This is Jim Hightower saying, Karl Rove would love nothing more than to see all of us move away, leaving America to him. We have no right to do anything like that. It's our happy duty to be in their face and take our country back.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Night, use as directed.
And now for a traffic update, we got Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, we saw it. We saw Alexander last night. Welcome to the program. By the way, Tom Hartman here with you. We Louise and I went to see the movie Alexander. One of the things that made me curious about it was we were driving down the street, and I heard this little clip about how a bunch of right-wing groups were going to boycott this movie. And I thought, well, that's interesting. They're going to boycott it. I want to go see it. It's sort of the same way I responded to I Am Curious Yellow back in 1967, I think it is. Anyhow, we went to see Alexander. And it was... The good news, I suppose, is, you know, it's relatively historically accurate. Most people really don't have a clue about who Alexander the Great was or what he did or how he screwed up, although he did have a major effect on history. I was disappointed that there wasn't more emphasis on his being a student of Aristotle, who was a student of Plato, who was a student of Socrates, and the whole thing, the whole irony that these guys, that Socrates, who was, many thought, one of the real proponents of democracy, ultimately ended up teaching the guy who taught the guy who taught the guy who ended democracy in Athens, in the city-state of Athens. That never really got communicated. But the good news was, in Oliver Stone's movie, I suppose, was that the violence was dramatically diminished. There were a lot of fight scenes in this thing, you know, a lot of battle scenes. but they were handled in such a way that you weren't wincing or reaching for the barf bag, which I really appreciate. These movies that I've seen in the past where you just have to look away half the movie, it's like, who wants gratuitous violence? Oliver Stone did a really nice job with the violence in this movie, for what it's worth. Obviously, what the right wing is concerned about is that Alexander was bisexual. And, in fact, he had a male lover throughout his life, and then he had a couple of wives. And that's very, not sexually explicitly or anything, but it's just, you know, it's pretty obvious from the movie. In fact, it's central to the movie. And the unfortunate part is that it's not so much of a hero's journey. The whole idea of a hero's journey that Joseph Campbell laid out years ago, that Robert McKee talks about in his story seminars and the story con that's held every year out in Palm Springs. You get all these writers and teachers and whatnot talking about these things. And there's this notion that there is this hero's journey where someone sets out on a quest, and in the process of reaching that quest, they are transformed. They learn lessons and they are changed. And, you know, presumably they change others around them. So like the Iliad and the Odyssey, you know, it's basically just, you know, a bunch of guys go off on an expedition and they try to get home. And they encounter the Minotaur and the Medusa and all these, you know, all these strange creatures. And it's fascinating, interesting. Well, the problem with Alexander was that it was a hero's journey without a hero and with nothing but journey. Alexander, you never really understood what his motivation was other than avoiding his mother. And that just, you know, it wasn't enough. So, frankly, my take on it is that the movie is tanking, not because the right wing has boycotted it because his bisexuality is revealed. I frankly doubt that has anything to do with it. I think it's tanking because it's not a particularly interesting movie. I mean, I'm fascinated by Greek history, so I found some interesting things in it. But basically, it's probably, you know, it's like the Cliff Notes version. It's easier to watch the movie than it is to read a biography of Alexander the Great. And it is, you know, they did go to some pains to make sure that you get a good sense of what this guy did in his life. But there's no transformation of the character, and there's no great, you know, there's no great and good literature, good fiction, good drama. Is that you have to have an evil force or a negative character, that the protagonist, the positive character, can only be as good as the evil character is bad. Now, this is a lesson George W. Bush knows very well, or let's say Karl Rove knows very well. When they elevated bin Laden to virtual demonic sainthood status, even though they already got the guy, that sheikh who was actually the mastermind of 9/11. They already got him. In fact, he just died recently. But if there wasn't Lex Luthor and Kryptonite, the Batman stories would have been incredibly boring. These guys run around and they solve crimes. Big deal. If you didn't have super criminals, the Penguin, the Juggler, whatever. And unfortunately, in the Alexander story, There is no antagonist other than his own internal demons, and those are not well portrayed, I felt. So, anyhow, I just wanted to share that with you, I suppose. Got a nice note here from Sue, one of the folks apparently in our chat room from time to time. She says, if you didn't already know, thought you'd want to know, I just happened to check out what kind of coverage the recount story got, and I found this. The article that I wrote, I believe, the piece that was published day before yesterday on Common Dreams, published Monday anyway, on Common Dreams, about the election shenanigans and how we can take a cue from what happened, or what is happening in Ukraine right now, in the Ukraine. However, it may be too late. I continue to think it's too late, but we'll see. I really think that most Americans have been imprinted with the idea that the election's over and that that George W. Bush won. And that, in fact, may well be the case. It may well not be the case. But the fact that John Kerry conceded certainly makes it unlikely, in my opinion, that there's going to be any change in this election outcome. Anyhow, Sue suggests that the Ukrainians are calling this the Orange Revolution because the opposition leader's logo is an orange flag. She's saying, let's call it the Red, White, and Blue Revolution. And, you know, take on that. I thought that was kind of cool. And actually, they're here, it's starting. On Saturday, this Saturday, 2 days hence, Saturday, December 4th, on the State House lawn in Ohio, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, investigative journalist Greg Palast, Ian Solomon, Bill Moss, a school board member from Columbus, Ohio, Bob Fitrakis of the Columbus Free Press, a bunch of folks here, a bunch of folks from the Ohio AFL-CIO, Council on American Islamic Relations, the Antioch Baptist Church of Cleveland, Ohio, Congressman John Conyers, he's been invited, I guess he hasn't confirmed, and they're going to have this rally on the courthouse, or the State House lawn, rather, this Saturday, 1 o'clock in Columbus, Ohio. And so we'll see what comes of it. We're going to be doing regular updates, keep you up to date on what's going on with all this stuff. Failure to provide public records requests in a timely manner. By the way, our final election alert for this morning anyway, or for this afternoon, for right now. Black Box Voting has filed a lawsuit to require Palm Beach County Supervisor of Elections, Teresa Lepore, to turn over the public records request filed by Black Box Voting on November 2nd. You may recall, Teresa Lepore is the notorious Republican who became a Democrat, who did the butterfly ballot that caused all these people to think that they were voting for Al Gore when they punched the ballot. In fact, you go across from the Al Gore name and you punch that hole, and you're actually punching the hole for Pat Buchanan. And so all these folks in these elderly Jewish neighborhoods mostly were voting for Pat Buchanan, who some have said over the years is not exactly a friend to the Jewish community, let's say. And a particular irony. Well, anyhow, Teresa Lepore, she's still at it. And so Bev Harris had submitted a public records request on the day of the elections, November 2nd, and she is not complying. She's not turning over the information, so they've filed a lawsuit against her. The records request that they had initially proposed contains vital diagnostic audit documents, which will be used to audit and verify the accuracy of the Palm Beach County election results from this last election. 13 more Florida counties and up to 80 Ohio counties are also on the list to be sued by Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org. If you want the whole scoop on that, just go to www.blackboxvoting.org. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. TomHartmann.com, the website. You want to drop into the chat room, just click live chat. It'll get you there. And that seems to work. 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a couple of quick calls here. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. Tom, boy, nobody does what you do. It's great. First of all, on the voting thing, isn't it interesting that in the place where we have the most problems, the people in charge with the voting is not some sort of independent, but in each case, some evil little Republican, like in Ohio, that black fella?
You know, yeah,
Secretary of State
Blackwell, yeah, Ken Blackwell.
And he is not a fair man.
No, and he doesn't pretend to be. In fact,
is not a fair woman.
In fact, when it was pointed out to Ken Blackwell that he could be the next Catherine Harris, he smiled and said, well, she got a seat in Congress out of it.
Exactly. So, and that's his behavior. You can tell he says, I'm doing the work I need to do because this is my chance to become somebody.
Yeah, I think
it's just
true.
So clear. But that's not why I called.
Okay.
You know, I love the way you began today's show, and it is true. Nobody does what you do. You're not going to hear the hero's journey on any other talk show today.
Hmm.
And yesterday, I loved what you were doing by talking about NLP and reframing.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to give you a sort of a timeline for this and see what you think.
Okay.
I start with Gurdjieff.
Yeah.
Whose idea
did you read Beelzebub's Tales to his grandson?
Actually, no.
By Gurdjieff. It's about the only thing he ever wrote.
Most of about him, and very little that he writes, because his writing is difficult.
His Beelzebub's Tales is really, really dense. Most of the stuff, when I was 17, I read The Fourth Way and Terterium Organatum by P.D. Ouspensky.
You're so much smarter than the rest of us. Yeah, Ouspensky, who did write in a way you could read.
Yeah, and that's the introduction to Gurdjieff. I also like the fact that one of Gurdjieff's big followers was Thomas de Hartmann, the musician. But anyway, we're about out of time, so you were going to
share this a little bit. So yes. Gurdjieff's idea was that we need to awaken from the consensual trance that we walk around in.
Right.
So we'll start with that. Now you get NLP,
right,
which is... You know, the reframe.
Yep.
That's what Scientology does, you see. They do a reframe.
That's what everybody does. Everybody has their frame. I mean, a frame is your way of viewing the world.
And then finally, you have Roveism.
Yeah. The ultimate frame. There you go.
Take morality and make it about not poor people, but about homosexuals. Something Jesus never mentioned.
Right, well said.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former Iowa Democratic Party candidate. View.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a direct TV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Thank you.
relentlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org and tomhartman.com. Our program today is sponsored by Small Dog Electronics. High technology electronics for low prices, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS. And welcome back. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Steve in Roswell, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, that guy that was just on, I just loved what he was saying about what you're doing, loving what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
I've read Uspensky, Gurdjieff, NLP. I had the book Princes, you know, Frogs into Princes on my bookshelf when you were talking about it last night.
By Bandler and Grinder, yep.
Yeah, by Bandler and Grinder. You brought up Uspensky, and you got to break out of prison. At first, you got to know you're in prison.
Yeah, this is something probably most of our listeners are not familiar with this, so let me just do a real fast explanation here. Gurdjieff was a Russian mystic who floated around the Middle East and then ended up in Europe around the end of the 19th century, early 20th century. And he had a follower by the name of P.D. Uspensky who thought that he could scientifically diagnose everything that Gurdjieff was talking about. And Gurdjieff basically was claiming to be an enlightened being, and he was saying that the source of his enlightenment was that he had learned how to be completely present at all time, and to boil it down super simply, it's sort of a late 19th century version of today's The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And although it was far more, you know, Uspensky made it very, very complicated because that's what they did in the 19th century. And Uspensky wrote about this, and the main premise was that people are asleep and they don't realize it, and that many people go through their whole entire lives in a trance, in a dream state, basically, spending all their time thinking about the past or the future, not noticing the present, or not noticing their own noticing. Gurdjieff's technique was actually to sort of put a little person behind yourself, that being you, and watch yourself, self-observation. Watch yourself being yourself. Watch yourself talking. Watch yourself, or listen to yourself, or whatever, experience yourself. And he claimed that people could become enlightened with this, and it was a fascinating premise, and a lot of people have made the same claim over the years. There are still Gurdjieff study groups all over the United States. The fourth way is his whole shtick. He also invented the Enneagram. So, anyhow, as you were saying, Steve.
Well, that was fabulous, yeah, and the Enneagram. And by the way, I have the practice of practicing the power of now by Eckhart Tolle, which you also mentioned. He does it very simply,
yeah,
as you said. But the one point I want to make is that what Uspensky pointed out in the fourth way, I believe, was that you can't do it alone. You need a group of conscious people working and assisting together.
Yeah,
and you're giving voice to something that could help bring people together to an awakening. The first thing you got to do to get over being hypnotized is to de-hypnotize yourself, and the truth does that. And you tell the truth. I love it.
Well, thank you.
I could go on and on, but I'm just going to listen to you. You're doing great.
Okay. Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call from Steve there and from Roswell, New Mexico. I do appreciate it. And it is a good point that Uspensky made. And again, you probably most folks don't want to go back and, you know, pull out the fourth way, which, as I recall, was about 300 pages long. But the bottom line is that there is this trance, and I would say that that there's the human nature dimension of being in a trance, which is what Uspensky and Gurdjieff were talking about, and there's also the media soup nature of the trance. That is, we're surrounded by, you know, it's constant input, constant stimulation that prevents us from ever noticing ourselves and what's going on around us. And not to knock the radio here, but nonetheless, it's always there. So every now and then it's useful to just kind of sit down and be quiet, pay attention, relax. The old tradition of Sabbath even is I think a piece of that puzzle. Not to get too esoteric here, but as Steve pointed out, having people with you as well. We're going to try and get over to the meetup, the Democracy for America meetup in Burlington, Vermont tonight. Check that out. If we make it, I'll report back tomorrow. 29 minutes past the hour.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. Overwhelmed, it's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment and referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The right of U.S. workers to organize was dealt a major blow today as the National Labor Relations Board ruled temporary workers will no longer be able to collectively bargain with their permanent status co-workers. The three Bush-appointed NLRB members argued that temporary employees are different than permanent workers. The two dissenting board members said this essentially puts the right to collectively bargain in the employer's hands, excluding a growing temp workforce from the benefits of union representation. 2.5 million temp workers in the U.S. will now only be allowed to organize if both their temporary agency and the company where they work approve, something that union organizers believe is almost impossible to achieve.
Florida, no. Wisconsin, yes. We're sick of paying more for less.
About 250, mostly union demonstrators, gathered at Wisconsin's State Elections Board to protest a $12 million contract with Accenture. That's the corporation that handled Florida's botched felon voter purge list. This contract is to develop a voter registration list for Wisconsin. Carol Wydell is a Wisconsin state employee and one of the protest organizers. She says one union has already filed a formal appeal against this Accenture contract.
One union, the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council, has filed an appeal of that contract. I think the legislature needs to pay attention to the fact that they have allowed agencies to sign these contracts, but you don't sign a contract for millions of dollars without even ever once taking into account, is it cheaper? Is it better? They never even ask that question.
Jim Cavanaugh of Wisconsin's South Central Labor Federation says state workers can do this work and Wisconsin should not use Accenture to privatize its voter list.
Well, we're out here today to protest, number one, this exorbitant contract with a company that has a questionable reputation, but also the whole process by which the state tends to contract out work while at the same time they are cutting back state employees who could do that same work much more inexpensively.
Phyllis Hasbrook of the No Stolen Elections Coalition told the protesters that turning over state voter lists to Accenture endangers democracy.
We're especially concerned with the way that computer systems could be used and have been used for electoral fraud. We will not accept this attempt to privatize our elections.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The steep rise in health care costs is making more and more Americans turn down benefits. Barely half of the employees who are offered employer-based health care plans opt to buy in. Economists blame the decrease on the trend of shifting more and more costs to the worker. In 1999, employees paid on average $169 per month for family coverage. Now they pay on average $464 per month.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
We bang the drum slowly and play the fife lowly. You know the song in my heart. In the turning of twilight, in the shadows of moonlight, you can show me a new place to start.
Welcome back to the radio support group of By and For We the People. What a novel idea. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop into our live chat room, where I hang out during the breaks. That's it. People are, what are you doing during the commercials? I'm sitting here reading and typing more often than not. Sometimes looking at, you know, what I'm going to be talking about next or, you know, whatever. But usually I find some really interesting point. Sometimes, actually, I even get things from the folks in the chat room that, hey, that's a great idea. I think I'll rant about that a little bit. And so, anyhow, it's a lot of fun. 1-866-889-8894. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
How are you, Tom?
Good. What's up?
Well, I was struck by your analysis there, your insight on the idea of the protagonist and the antagonist, and I was thinking how that holds true in so many realms. For instance, would we have ever heard of Elliot Ness were it not for Al Capone?
Exactly. Yeah. I wrote a piece about this, actually, that was on Common Dreams about a year ago. It's on, if you go to TomHartmann.com and click Articles on Democracy and scroll down, it's called A Fistful of Kryptonite for Super George. And it's all about the ways that Karl Rove used the war on terror to turn George W. Bush from an ordinary schleb into Super George.
Right. Well, I was also thinking, for instance, and maybe this means something to you folks up there in New England, the Red Sox, as sweet as their World Series victory was, it was made even sweeter by the fact that they beat the Yankees in the American League, and the way they did it after losing the first three.
Yeah.
You know, it's just they're hated rivals. And then, of course, you know, if we can go even further, I don't know if you've been following this Jeopardy guy that kept winning every night.
Yep, I saw that in the paper today. He finally lost.
And, you know, it was just amazing to me. You know, I mean, I kind of, you know, I almost got to resent the guy, not so much because he won the money, but because he seemed to know everything, you know,
yeah.
And it was just nice to see somebody beat him, you know, and of course he stumbled, but I mean, it's you know, it was, suspiciously enough, it was the last day of November, which is sweeps month, so you wonder, although those shows are taped, but it was just good to see the woman, you know, defeat this guy who seemed to know everything, and
yeah.
you could go on and on with different areas where... Well, for instance, Paradise Lost. I'm sure you've read that.
Actually, I haven't.
You haven't? Oh, wow. Well, many people have said that that's one of, you know, Milton's masterpieces.
Mm-hmm.
And the devil is a much more interesting figure than God, you know. And if you really want to get into this level of theology, you know, some people wonder, well, why would God create a devil or why would he allow a devil? Well, not to anthropomorphize too much here, but maybe God is doing that so that he looks better compared to the devil. Who knows? I mean, it could go on and on with that kind of thing, but you just wonder what the significance of all that is. Is that something we humans look at, or is it part of the cosmic significance of the universe?
You know, now you're getting into Plato's, you know, great question of the archetypes. You know, do they precede form? Is there an ideal that precedes form, or does form precede? You know, does form come in, and then of course Plato thought the ideal preceded form, but
you have read the Republic then.
Well, on bits and pieces of it years ago. The whole thing in the cave with the shadows, and that's my recollection.
Well, yeah, I think that's, you know, not to get too heavy here, but I think a lot of that is what's going on. I think so much of our religious ideas, for instance, it's a big word, but the anthropomorphical idea we have, I think it was Bertrand Russell that said if a triangle could think, a triangle would think that God was a triangle.
Yeah. Well, here's a better way of saying that's a good one. It's sort of a variation on the old, you know, if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail.
Sure.
The tendency to anthropomorphize is built into us, to see everything as if it was human, to think that our cats think the same way we do or our dogs do.
I have a cat on my lap as we speak.
There you go.
And I was just going to say that. We do it both ways. We want to bring God down to our level, and we want to elevate the animals up to our level.
Yeah. And I think that this is just an aspect of human nature, and I think that there's something really extraordinarily wonderful about it.
Well,
and there can be a danger to it.
There is a danger, I think, in the religious realm.
Yeah, certainly. Particularly when you combine religion with power, which we're going to get into in the second hour of our program, in fact. That's what we're going to be talking about in the second hour today.
I look forward to that.
So we're going to have a guest on, this guy who's promoting school books, teaching morality using religion, and they've got a lawsuit going on around this stuff, and it's
fascinating.
Guy? Yeah. Yeah, should be an interesting conversation.
We'll be tough with them.
So I'll do my best.
All right.
Anyhow, Rick, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Mike in Orlando, Florida on the line. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. I've got a few topics I wanted to talk about real quick. But before that, I sent you an article from USA Today about Kofi Annan stepping down. The calls from a senator up in Minnesota.
Oh, is this today? I haven't read my email yet today. It's I was writing all morning, and
because under Kofi Annan's watch, they had that oil for food program,
right,
debacle.
And his son is involved in it and all that. Yeah.
Meanwhile, back here in the
as is, by the way, Halliburton. This is the interesting thing that doesn't get discussed by the right-wing talk show hosts, is that it looks like Halliburton and a number of other American oil companies were major recipients and participants in the nefarious activities of the Oil for Food program. But, you know, nobody wants to talk about
that. The big thing that boggles my mind is, though, back here we're having voter problems when we point at Ukraine. Back here during someone's watch, I can't remember who it was, but back on 9/11, some disaster happened, yet no one called for our leader to step down.
Yeah.
On that end. And as far as foreign elections are concerned, over in Bushistan, of course, Karzai got in because he was going up against about a dozen
17
competitors. And that's probably the same thing that's going to happen in Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, well, we'll see. I'm not placing any bets on Iraq. I think that if Sistani and Sadr get their act together, and it looks like they are, and they actually force through the elections, and the elections are held, that we may well end up with a Shiite theocracy there that then chooses to essentially normalize relations with Iran and throw us out. And that's going to be a very interesting time. Anyhow, Mike, I got to move along. Thanks for the call.
Okay,
good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Mark in Clarksville, Tennessee, on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. You know, I have so much respect for you, and you have so much that you put out. If you could put together a DVD with your rants that we could play at rallies to get people together to go up against this evil regime that we have, it would be so helpful.
Well, here's my hope, Mark, and that is that you, by listening to whatever I have to share, whatever value I bring to the table in this, and our listeners, and of course all of us have our own stuff that we bring to the table, and to whatever extent that I can help educate folks or help show folks how to win the water cooler wars or do a good rant or whatever, that you steal that from me, that you take that you model that. I mean, it just like when I was I don't know, 13 years old or something, I thought it would be just a hoot to get into radio. And I got my first job in radio when I was 16 in real radio. And I used to sit there watching Walter Cronkite, and Walter Cronkite would say, "And tonight on the news," and I would say, "And tonight on the news," and I would just, like, I literally sat there and imitated him for hours and hours and hours, for, you know, learning how to use my voice. And I would suggest that, you know, our NLP courses, I mean, anything, just take it, because I, you know, I can't be everywhere.
Well, Tom,
it's like, tag, you're it, Mark.
I go to your website and I print up all your archives and stuff, but you know, the rants that you go on, if I could have a collection of your rants, that would be just so.
Well, if you want them, if you want them in audio, there is a collection of them as MP3 files on our website. There's several gigabytes of shows going back 2 years, and they're excerpts that Mike Toth put together. In fact, that was Mike, who was the last caller.
I'll try to put together my own DVD. On
there you go.
Tom.
There you go. And you can just download
those.
You are
my hero. I mean, you have so much knowledge and in-depth, and the way that you express yourself, it's just hard for me. You know, when I listen to you, I can only put forth about 10% of what you put out.
Well, thank you, Mark. I don't handle flattery well, so but I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much. And thanks for the call. Good to hear from you, and you know, hang in there. That's the thing. I mean, one of the funny things about, or interesting or whatever, human nature things about people, is that we tend to look to others to do things for us. I fall into this. I, throughout the last, what, 5-6 months or so, as I was getting more partisan, more supportive of John Kerry specifically, in a way, the meta structure, the structure behind the structure of the message that I was delivering was if we just elect this guy, he'll solve our problems. And it's really a flawed assumption. And you know, and I fell right into it. It's easy to do. And not because he's a bad guy or a good guy. I mean, we can sort that out. That's an argument and a legitimate one to have. But because it really has to begin with each one of us. You're the one who has the power. Each one of us has the power. This was the wonderful message, frankly, that Howard Dean brought to the campaign. That it's individual citizens. It's individual citizens that make American democracy work. And it's individual citizens getting active. And I tell you, the 2 years that I've been doing this program, I took a 30-year break from radio. I was on the radio every weekday from basically 1968 to 1978. There were a couple of interruptions in there, and a lot of it I was doing, like, you know, 6 a.m. to noon kind of stuff when I was doing the news, because I was building a business and I was doing other things at the same time. But I spent that decade on the radio. I got off the air in 1978. And 2 years ago, decided to get back into radio because nobody was doing liberal talk radio. And I thought, somebody has to go on the air in the same time slot as Rush is and take him on. And so, you know, here I am. And I've been here for 2 years doing this and will continue to as long as I can, and which hopefully will be a good long time because it's a start of doing this for the last 2 years. In the country into a train wreck, you know, save us or whatever. And as a consequence, I think in some small part of the conversations that we've been having on this program for the last couple of years, they're starting to get active, and those of you who listen regularly know who many of these folks are. People who are volunteering with the Green Party or the Democratic Party, who are getting politically active, who are running for the school board, who are running for Congress. We had one guy running for the United States Senate. People saying that, people just showing up at meetups, people participating, people submitting things. Rob Call, who just decided, okay, we need another good news service out there. So he started opednews.com. He just started it. I mean, you know, he registered the website name. What does that cost? $25 a year, something like that. And I know he's probably $15 a year. It's a Dotster or something. And boom, you know. And here now it's a huge success. He's got 300,000 readers a month, which is not inconsequential. Touching a lot of people's lives, just doing it out of his home there in Pennsylvania. I mean, these folks are my heroes. You folks are my heroes. The people who are out there doing, even if it's just waking yourself up, even if it's just talking to your family and friends, talking to your neighbors, talking to the folks around the water cooler, spreading the word, because that's how it always happens. You know, it's a terrible cliche, Margaret Mead's statement, "Don't ever think that a small group of determined people can't change the world. Indeed, that's the only way it's ever happened." But that's what it is. Every movement, from democracy in the United States from Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, all the isms, all the religions, the civil rights movement, every movement starts with one or two or three people sitting around going, you know, we've had enough of this. Or there's something wrong with this. I think it's time to change this. You know, slavery doesn't seem like such a good idea. It seems like there's something really morally wrong with it, or whatever. And once that awakening happens and the idea starts spreading, it becomes what Richard Dawkins called a meme, you know, a thought virus. It becomes infectious. And, you know, that's the good news. The bad news is that the conservatives figured this out years ago, and they figured out that they could genetically engineer thought viruses. This is, you know, what we talked about in Framing on Tuesday this week. They discovered that they could create frames, ways of viewing the world. And by repeated exposure to people, they could pass them along and cause people to think that up is down. That taxes are not, for example, I mean, of course, nobody loves to pay taxes. I've never loved to pay taxes. But when I pay taxes, I'm thinking about the benefits I'm getting for them. I'm thinking about the security and safety that I enjoy. I'm thinking about the roads that I'm going to use. I'm thinking about the schools that my children all went to and that I went to. I'm thinking about the police and fire departments who will be there and available if God forbid anything should happen to our home or ourselves, the EMTs who show up, it's all there, and they successfully flipped this from taxes as the price you pay for a civil society, as the cost of admission to a civil society, to paraphrase Franklin Roosevelt, into a burden. Well, I suppose, if you're a billionaire, it's a burden. But for the rest of us, we're getting pretty good value for our tax money. I think billionaires do, too. I mean, it's the system is what allows billionaires to become billionaires. So they've been doing their reframing. It's time for us to be doing some reframing, too. Going back to the original frames, in fact, that the founders started this country on. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A new report says the Arctic is warming faster than previously thought, and the entire world will feel the heat. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet, according to a 4-year study by hundreds of scientists. The Arctic Climate Impact Assessment represents the work of experts from the United States, Canada, and 6 other countries. Susan Hassel authored the final report, and she says its findings should concern everyone.
Arctic climate is warming rapidly now. This is not a future problem, it's a now problem. And much larger changes are projected. And these changes have enormous impacts not only on our world, because these changes in the Arctic will amplify the global warming and make the rest of the world warmer. These changes will also raise sea levels around the world.
Hassel says at least half of the summer sea ice in the Arctic will melt by the end of the century. She says that will lead to an accelerating pattern of warming because the retreating ice exposes more open water that can absorb still more solar energy. The report blames the warming trend on carbon dioxide from the burning of fossil fuels. Hassel says a continued warming trend could raise sea levels by several feet in the next few centuries, especially as ice that sits on land continues to melt.
We also know that glaciers all around the Arctic are melting and already contributing to sea level rise. The glaciers of Alaska, for example, have been melting very dramatically for 3 or 4 decades and speeding up in recent decades. We also know that the melting on the surface of the Greenland ice sheet around the edges, especially in summer, is increasing. It's increased by about 16% in recent decades.
The Arctic Climate Impact Assessment Group will soon release a set of recommended policies to fight global climate change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I don't know about you, but it seems to me that 4 years is a very long time. These last 4 years have moved so slow. At times I thought I'd lost my mind. My doctor, well, he sympathized and said that I should face my fears and visualize the best things about George Walker Bush for 4 more years.
Oh my, what can that be?
If you say so, Doc.
There you go.
4 more years of sweet compassion, conservatism feels so right. I know I'll be well cared for so long as I am rich and white.
Yes, that's, well, I qualify for half of that, I suppose, but anyhow, there's an interesting juxtaposition. I find this fascinating. The EPA, this in the ABC News today, the Associated Press reported, November 30th, actually it was a couple days ago, that the EPA is looking at testing pesticides on people, using studies that have been done by industry, where industry goes out and they say, okay, we got this pesticide, we want to check this thing out. Some of the more extreme versions, they've actually, in Italy, they've tested pesticides on newborn babies and pregnant mothers. It's illegal in the United States. And in the United States, they get college students or they get poor people, basically, people who will do it for the money, and they pay them $200 a day is the average rate to drink pesticides. And then they monitor them over a few months. Now, of course, a lot of these chemicals, the big problem with them is that 10 years, 15 years, 20 years down the road, people get cancer from them. Obviously, they're not testing for that. They're looking for short-term effects. And if you go back to, here's a June 7th, 2000 story in the Washington Post. This is from the last year of the Clinton administration. The Clinton administration has decided to sidestep a major and political ethical quagmire by rejecting the use of human experiments in setting regulatory limits for pesticides. Worried about a resurgence in human experiments by pesticide companies, some of which have been testing products on students and other volunteers for decades, the EPA will adopt a policy of officially ignoring such studies and establishing legal limits for pesticides in food and water. In other words, they're not going to encourage it anymore. They can't stop it, but they're not going to encourage it. And now here we've got this story from 3 days ago. In setting limits on chemicals in food and water, the Environmental Protection Agency may rely on industry tests that expose people to poisons and raise ethical questions. The new policy, which the EPA is still developing, would allow Bush administration political appointees to referee any ethical disputes. And by this sleazy move, says Jeff Rutsch, an environmental group, he says, EPA defers developing enforceable ethical standards. They're talking about Aldicarb, Carbofuran, DDVP, and Malathion, testing them on humans. $200 a day. Drink your chemicals. The contrast between the Clinton administration and the Bush administration in morals. Morals. I mean, what else can you call it? Just morals. It's remarkable.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The right of U.S. workers to organize was dealt a major blow today as the National Labor Relations Board ruled temporary workers will no longer be able to collectively bargain with their permanent status co-workers. The three Bush-appointed NLRB members argued that temporary employees are different than permanent workers. The two dissenting board members said this essentially puts the right to collectively bargain in the employer's hands, excluding a growing temp workforce from the benefits of union representation. The 2.5 million temp workers in the U.S. will now only be allowed to organize if both their temporary agency and the company where they work approve, something that union organizers believe is almost impossible to achieve.
Florida, no. Wisconsin, yes. We're sick of paying more for less.
About 250, mostly union demonstrators, gathered at Wisconsin's State Elections Board to protest a $12 million contract with Accenture. That's the corporation that handled Florida's botched felon voter purge list. This contract is to develop a voter registration list for Wisconsin. Carol Wydell is a Wisconsin state employee and one of the protest organizers. She says one union has already filed a formal appeal against this Accenture contract.
One union, the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council, has filed an appeal of that contract. I think the legislature needs to pay attention to the fact that they have allowed agencies to sign these contracts, but you don't sign a contract for millions of dollars without even ever once taking into account, is it cheaper? Is it better? They never even ask that question.
Jim Cavanaugh of Wisconsin's South Central Labor Federation says state workers can do this work and Wisconsin should not use Accenture to privatize its voter list.
Well, we're out here today to protest, number one, this exorbitant contract with a company that has a questionable reputation, but also the whole process by which the state tends to contract out work while at the same time they are cutting back state employees who could do that same work much more inexpensively.
Phyllis Hasbrook of the No Stolen Elections Coalition told the protesters that turning over state voter lists to Accenture endangers democracy.
We're especially concerned with the way that computer systems could be used and have been used for electoral fraud. We will not accept this attempt to privatize our elections.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The steep rise in health care costs is making more and more Americans turn down benefits. Barely half of the employees who are offered employer-based health care plans opt to buy in. Economists blame the decrease on the trend of shifting more and more costs to the worker. In 1999, employees paid on average $169 per month for family coverage. Now they pay on average $464 per month.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by Billionaires for Bush.
Talk about bitter irony.
George W. wrapped himself in the flag and campaigned under a political theme of support our troops. Yet, even as he campaigned, troops in Iraq continue to die precisely because he has failed shamefully to support them. All the political rah-rah stuff in the world won't stop roadside bombs and other blasts. For the deadly reality of war, our troops need the best protective armor and equipment there is. But even now, their commander-in-chief continues to short them, especially the National Guard and reservists who are doing much of the most dangerous work in Iraq. For months, entire units have gone begging for the most basic steel plates needed to armor their Humvees against the deadly blasts they encounter daily. Families of soldiers have offered to buy these steel plates themselves, but have been rejected by commanders who keep promising that the Army will provide better equipment soon. Soon never seems to come, and soldiers literally are reduced to scavenging scrap pieces of sheet metal and sandbags to provide some makeshift protection, though this has not stopped the deaths and maimings. The Bushites loudly contend that they have spared no expense to outfit the troops, but the soldiers, their families, and the daily body counts say otherwise. In fact, while the Pentagon has said that it plans to retrofit some 4,400 trucks in Iraq with armor kits, it had provided only about 800 of the kits by mid-September. As the mother of one National Guardsman put it, if we're one of the richest nations in the world, our soldiers shouldn't be sent out looking like the Beverly Hillbillies. The Pentagon now says it hopes to have all Humvees armored by next April, a full year and more than 1,000 deaths after Bush launched his poorly prepared war. This is Jim Hightower saying, to demand that Washington support our troops with more than political rhetoric, call Operation Truth, 212-982-9699.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. With Archives of White Rose Society, drop in our chat room, go to tomhartman.com, it'll get you in there. I don't see Atomic in there. We had a fellow in there yesterday from, where was he? Czechoslovakia. That was interesting. Got a visitor in the chat room from Czechoslovakia, callers from Canada. It was an international show yesterday. Anyhow, welcome back to our program. It's Thursday. It's the second hour of our program. And our second hour Thursday, traditionally, we take a bit of a break from the normal political grind, as it were, and explore things that maybe you didn't know you didn't know, didn't know you needed to know, maybe you didn't know you did know, and...
You know that you're wrong.
But you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe, maybe not. Is it illegal to teach the bill? It's Wednesday today? Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I've got my days wrong. Hey, Corbin. Corbin Gordon is with us. I'm great. I'm confused.
Well, I hope after we talk, you're not. But you may be, so we'll have to see.
All righty. You're with Corbin Gordon is with the American Dream Makers Incorporated. And what's your website there, Corbin?
AmericanDreamMakers.com, all one word.
Okay, great. And your PR piece, the thing that you sent out here, has a link to a story in the Tri-Valley Herald, which talks about this teacher who's trying to teach apparently your curriculum, and he's getting into problems for it. And reading it, it sort of seems to me that what you guys are doing is trying to slip religion into public schools. Is that an accurate portrayal?
No, it's not.
Okay.
We're not trying to slip religion into schools. What we're trying to do is teach teachers how to teach morals and moral values in schools without getting sideways with the Establishment Clause and without risking getting sued.
But this guy is getting sued here.
I'm sorry, what?
But this guy is getting sued, isn't he? This Cupertino public school teacher.
Actually, he's not getting sued. He's suing the school system.
I see.
What's happening
Stephen
out
Williams.
In California is he hands out to his fifth grade class the Declaration of Independence, certain writings by George Washington, things like that. All of those refer to a creator or a god.
Yeah. Now I see that on your list is George Washington's Prayer Journal. My understanding is that George Washington's Prayer Journal was written in 1917 by, I have his name here, William J. Johnson. 1919, excuse me. Published by Abington Press, in fact. I've got the collected works of George Washington here. I spent an hour with it this morning. There ain't no prayer journal in there. The first time it appears is in 1919, as far as I can tell. And George Washington, and it's not even really written the way that George Washington wrote things.
And that may be the case. What we're trying to do, and please understand what our approach to teachers is.
Mm-hmm.
Our approach to teachers is, look, and what we're concerned about this case is that a principal said, hey, you can't hand out the Declaration of Independence anymore, and you can't refer to that. And what we're concerned about is, look, if you throw the Declaration of Independence out, you're throwing out the document that provides for school teachers the source to talk about moral values without having to reference the Bible or religion or anything like that. It's our position that you can discuss the moral instruction of America is different than the religious instruction of America.
Well, Corbin, the law is pretty clear. It's entirely okay and appropriate for teachers to even discuss religion. They just can't advocate a religion. There's a big difference between saying there are some people who are Christians and this is their doctrine. There are some people who are Jews. There's this doctrine. Here's the difference between Catholics and Protestants. This is what Martin Luther did in whatever the year was, 1613 or whatever. And here's the list, and that's perfectly okay. That's perfectly acceptable.
Right.
But when the teacher steps over the boundary into saying, here's how you should think, that's when they get into trouble. And isn't the school district suggesting that really what you're suggesting is that here's how you should think? For example, on your website, you talk about the two rights that exist here in the United States. The first are rights given us by the government. And first of all, I'd say, no, the government doesn't give us any rights. And there was a long, long series of letters between Jefferson and Madison when Jefferson was in Paris in 1787. And Madison had just finished the first draft of the Constitution. He sent it over to Jefferson. And Jefferson sent him back a letter saying, you know, what I don't like about that, he talked about all the wonderful things that he did like in it. And he said, what I don't like about it is it doesn't have an explicit Bill of Rights. Every country, every citizen is entitled to a Bill of Rights. And Madison writes back to him, I have to go back and look. But anyhow, Madison, because this issue was also being debated between Madison and Hamilton in the Federalist Papers, but Madison wrote back to him saying, there's no need for a Bill of Rights because the state holds no rights. Therefore, it cannot give out any rights. The preamble to the Constitution says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, and so on. In other words, it's we who hold the rights, and we are endowing our government, this government that we are creating, with some privileges, but we hold the rights. So government doesn't give us any rights.
And that's absolutely correct. Let me refer you to the Declaration of Independence to talk to you specifically about exactly that, okay? It's our position that each individual is born, like the Declaration of Independence says, with inalienable rights, okay? And let's start from the beginning. In the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident. And remember, I'm coming at this from the approach of, if I'm a teacher and I'm in a school and I want to discuss right and wrong. I want to be able to talk to students about right and wrong and discuss with them and have a conversation with them about some of these things. And I'm concerned because I don't want to cite to the Bible. I don't want to cite to other sources, but I do want to have these types of conversations, and I feel like it's illegal. We want to talk to them about what the Declaration of Independence discusses as far as their ability to talk about right and wrong and moral values in their classroom, okay? So let's start with that first sentence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, and I'm going to keep coming back to
It's actually the second, Corbin, pardon my interrupting you here,
important
but that's really the second sentence. The first sentence in the Declaration of Independence talks about the laws of nature and of nature's God. And have you read Jefferson's writings on what he meant when he said nature's God? Jefferson actually wrote the Declaration of Independence, you know. There was a big battle between him and John Adams. John Adams wanted him to take nature's out. He wanted it to either be the Christian God or just God. And Jefferson said, no, it's going to be nature's God. Mm-hmm. Because Jefferson believed that egalitarianism, that the democracy was something to be found in the kingdom throughout the entire living everything, that absolutely everything had. In fact, this was one of the big arguments that Jefferson had with a lot of the other deists, because a lot of them figured humans were the only ones capable of these kind of things. And Jefferson said, no, this is in nature. The democracy is in our genes. The democracy is just absolutely everywhere, that the Creator, however you define the Creator, whether it was Ben Franklin's idea of the Creator as you know, some unknown force that just threw the universe into being and then never again intervened, or whether it was Monroe's concept of the Creator as a Christian anthropomorphic God who was very involved, or as some would say Washington. It's arguable. But however it was, Jefferson was very clear that this is just how it is. That, you know, I mean, that's kind of how they talked those days. But to take that as a stepping off point, to then say, as you do on your website, that inherent rights are a God-given gift to all mankind and are defined by the law of the light of Christ. Now, as a Christian, I personally am not offended by that. But as an American, and as a person who believes that our government really should be separate from our religion, for the reasons that James Madison said, not because I'm concerned that religion is going to take over the government, although I think that that's a legitimate concern, but because, as Madison pointed out over and over and over again, the great danger is not to government, it's to religions. That, I mean, these guys lived through the terrible times of the 1600s when the Puritans in 1658 passed a law that made it a crime punishable by death to be a Quaker, and they burned Quaker women to the stake whenever they came into the state of Massachusetts. This went on for almost 100 years. The Quakers then went to Pennsylvania in the early 1700s looking for safe haven because they couldn't even go to Virginia. There was a law that said that if a ship bearing Quakers from England showed up in Virginia, it would be sunk. And finally, they had this safe haven in Pennsylvania. What was the first thing they do? They passed a law that said that if you didn't go to Quaker services on Sunday, you'd go to jail. And so what Madison, and pointing these things out, what Madison said is that if religious people gain political power, it will corrupt the religion. Isn't that a danger?
No question, and I don't disagree with you on that. I agree with you on the idea that we're not coming in and saying, you know, if you look at nature's God in that second sentence, the Creator, that Creator can be anything, evolution, science,
right.
A Christian God, a Buddhist God, an Islamic God. The idea here is not that we're trying to say one particular God over another particular God.
Then why are you having a problem with the school district?
Is this idea of self-evident truth that doesn't need to be, it doesn't need to have a source in any particular religion, that has a source just in it's self-evident. Okay,
you're right.
So
this is where Jefferson, you know, Jefferson in his letters with John Adams later in his life, and they're well published and they're all over the place. I'm sure you've probably seen them. And he and Adams go back and forth on this thing, and they both agree on it, that the clergy at that time was trying to suggest that American law was grounded in the Ten Commandments. And Jefferson says this was a fraud perpetrated by the clergy, quote unquote. And he goes back and he says the common law, the American law was grounded in British common law, and British common law goes back to the year 530. 536, when the beginning of the Heptarchy. And 536 was 200 years before the idea of Christianity was introduced into England. And he says, therefore, you know, our common law precedes Christianity. It was 200 years that we were functioning before the phrase Jesus Christ was even heard in England. And he says this is a fraud to suggest that American law is based on the Ten Commandments. Why is it that there is this aggressive push, it seems, and you're sounding very reasonable, but I kind of get it from your stuff that you're part of this, to push religion into our schools and into our governmental affairs, into our public schools.
Let me explain the core of what we teach to teachers, so that you'll understand that's not what we're trying to do.
Okay.
Our position is that those who are religionists and those who are non-religionists have both been fighting for turf that belonged to neither of them. They've both been trying to get into our schools their particular ideas. The fact of the matter is, there is a common ground between both of them. Okay.
Well, that's great. Corbin, we got to take a break. I'd like to hear more about that. If you can hold on here for a minute, we'll take a break and we'll wrap it up on the other end of that. Is that all right with you?
That sounds fine.
Okay, great. Thanks. It's the Tom Harbin Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
No, you may not hang at the park. Yes, even if all your friends are there. Go to Mrs. Feldman's till I'm home from work.
Keeping tabs on your kid after school isn't easy.
Yes, tomorrow too.
But if you don't, she's more likely to do drugs.
No, I am not easier on your brother.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, America. How are you? Said, don't you know me? I'm your native son.
And welcome back. We're talking with Corbin Gorbin, Gordon, co-founder of American Dream Makers Inc., AmericanDreamMakers.com on the web. And Corbin, you're this teacher who's teaching your material, Terry Thompson of the Alliance Defense Fund. Says the principal's policy is a violation of the teacher's First Amendment rights, and their group involves 700 attorneys around the country who are focused on legal issues supporting religious freedom, anti-abortion efforts, and marriage between a man and a woman only. And George W. Bush's and the things that you're suggesting that this guy share with his kids are things like John Adams' diary from July 26th of 1796, where he says the Christian religion is above all the religions that ever prevailed. Or George W. Bush's 2004 Day of Prayer proclamation. I mean, aren't you doing a little spinning here?
No, and you need to understand, he's not. I think you've made a connection. He's not teaching our curriculum, and is not affiliated with us at all.
Oh, okay. How come this link to this was included in your material?
When you looked at whatever material came through.
Yeah.
Our approach here is to help teachers understand how they can, in their classrooms, teach, about moral values, talk about these things with their students, not get crosswise with the Constitution, and be able to talk about the fundamental inalienable rights that each man and each woman in this nation, was born with, basically, and to be able to do it in a way that's legal and that can be very, very good for their students.
Well, I think we would all be in favor of that, but I think we're also all aware that there are a lot of folks out there who use very nice-sounding language to conceal an agenda. Are you telling me that your agenda is not to promote Christianity in the schools?
No, it's not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
What our agenda
then
is...
Then why was this link in your material?
The common sense that America was built on, the self-evident truths that don't have a source in, I mean, this goes back to what I started to discuss before we left at break.
Right.
Okay? When you look at the Declaration of Independence, it starts out by saying we hold these truths to be self-evident. In a court of law, that's self-evident means that it's something that can't be challenged. It's something that doesn't need to be proven. It's called judicial notice in a court proceeding, where I could go into a judge and say, Your Honor, I'd ask you to take judicial notice that the sun rose on a particular day.
Yeah, although I think we both know also, though, that the Declaration of Independence is not a legal document. It was one of the founding documents of this country, but it is not part of the legal code of this nation. It's not like the Constitution.
That's exactly right. It's not law. It's something that gives us guidance as far as what we founded this nation on, okay?
Sure.
Let me walk you through just kind of what we focus on in talking to teachers about, okay?
Okay, we've got about 2 minutes
you
here,
read
Corbin.
Through that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their creator, and we've talked about how a creator can be whatever you want it to be, a god, evolution, whatever, but they're endowed with certain inalienable rights, and that among these, and that's important, among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, we're talking about inalienable rights, and few people talk about among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which means there are other rights. What are the other rights that they're talking about there? What are the other rights that human beings have inalienably within them? In your opinion, Tom, think about that. What would you say are other rights that maybe they didn't discuss in here?
Well, what I'm curious about, Corbin, is what you guys are teaching your teachers to teach.
I'm sorry, what?
What are you teaching your teachers to teach? Are those other rights?
What are we teaching our teachers to teach?
Right. Yeah, you're teaching teachers how to teach this stuff, right?
We're presenting
okay.
this to them. Yeah.
So we've got about 30 seconds left here, Corbin. So what are you telling teachers are those other rights?
Those things that are, for example, those things that are self-evident, that are just commonsensical. We have the right to be honest in our lives. We have the right to work hard. We have the right to forgive. We have the right to be good. I mean, you could wrap it up basically in a simple statement of we as human beings have the right to be good.
Yeah, well, this is the point that the government doesn't give rights. This is, I mean, you have the right to eat, too, but it doesn't say so in the Constitution. You have the right to marry, but it doesn't say so anywhere in the Constitution.
Well, you know, we're not saying that they're granted to you because you are a human being.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're granted to you by a government. They're
okay,
granted
well,
to you unalienable because you are a human being.
There you go. Corbin Gordon, the co-founder of the American Dreammakers, Inc., AmericanDreammakers.com. Corbin, thanks for being with us today. I'm sorry we're...
No.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The right of U.S. workers to organize was dealt a major blow today as the National Labor Relations Board ruled temporary workers will no longer be able to collectively bargain with their permanent status co-workers. The three Bush-appointed NLRB members argued that temporary employees are different than permanent workers. The two dissenting board members said this essentially puts the right to collectively bargain in the employer's hands, excluding a growing temp workforce from the benefits of union representation. The 2.5 million temp workers in the U.S. will now only be allowed to organize if both their temporary agency and the company where they work approve, something that union organizers believe is almost impossible to achieve.
Florida, no. Wisconsin, yes. We're sick of paying more for less.
About 250, mostly union demonstrators, gathered at Wisconsin's State Elections Board to protest a $12 million contract with Accenture. That's the corporation that handled Florida's botched felon voter purge list. This contract is to develop a voter registration list for Wisconsin. Carol Wydell is a Wisconsin state employee and one of the protest organizers. She says one union has already filed a formal appeal against this Accenture contract.
One union, the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council, has filed an appeal of that contract. I think the legislature needs to pay attention to the fact that they have allowed agencies to sign these contracts, but you don't sign a contract for millions of dollars without even ever once taking into account, is it cheaper? Is it better? They never even ask that question.
Jim Cavanaugh of Wisconsin's South Central Labor Federation says state workers can do this work and Wisconsin should not use Accenture to privatize its voter list.
Well, we're out here today to protest, number one, this exorbitant contract with a company that has a questionable reputation, but also the whole process by which the state tends to contract out work while at the same time they are cutting back state employees who could do that same work much more inexpensively.
Phyllis Hasbrook of the No Stolen Elections Coalition told the protesters that turning over state voter lists to Accenture endangers democracy.
We're especially concerned with the way that computer systems could be used and have been used for electoral fraud. We will not accept this attempt to privatize our elections.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The steep rise in health care costs is making more and more Americans turn down benefits. Barely half of the employees who are offered employer-based health care plans opt to buy in. Economists blame the decrease on the trend of shifting more and more costs to the worker. In 1999, employees paid on average $169 per month for family coverage. Now they pay on average $464 per month.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I've been there one time, been there
Welcome back on this Wednesday, not Thursday. Boy, I've been thinking it was Thursday ever since I woke up this morning. Louise comes in and says, well, you can say this or that. And I said, no, I'm perfectly willing to sound like an idiot on the air. I'll just tell you the truth. I was confused. We just had this guy on as a guest, just, you know, somebody to argue with. And it's one of the folks in the chat room mentions, he was like a lobbyist, you know. It's like, on their website, they're talking about promoting Christianity in the schools. He sent us a link to the story. I couldn't get him to come clean. There really is this really rather remarkable thing. For example, the Moonies. Reverend Moon, you know, he owns the Washington Times, the newspaper that all the Republicans love. Now he owns UPI as well, which is a little spooky. And Reverend Moon got crowned, you know, in the Senate Dirksen, Everett Dirksen Senate office building, the Senate Dirksen office building, recently. And he made the proclamation, and there were several members of Congress. One of them carried the crown up to Reverend Moon. Turns out Senator John Warner had booked the room. And Moon says, and I quote, "Emperors, kings, and presidents have declared to all heaven and earth that Reverend Sung Myung Moon is none other than humanity's Savior, Messiah, returning Lord, and true parent." End quote. Said in the Senate office building. It ain't supposed to happen. No, it's not supposed to happen. And here we've got Antonin Scalia last week speaking before the oldest Jewish congregation in America, an Orthodox Jewish congregation in New York, and the oldest Jewish synagogue. And to quote the Associated Press, Scalia noted that in Europe, religion-neutral leaders almost never publicly use the word God. Scalia then went on to suggest that the reason Hitler had initiated the Holocaust was because of that European tradition of separation in church and state. Did it turn out, Scalia said, I'm quoting now, a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the guy who will probably be the next Chief Justice, did it turn out, by reason of the separation of church and state, that the Jews were safer in Europe than they were in the United States of America? I don't think so. End quote. Antonin Scalia. He's blaming the Holocaust on separation of church and state. What Scalia apparently doesn't realize is that on the 14th of July in 1933, the first year of the reign of Adolf, the German Reich officially incorporated the German Protestant Church. It became the official state religion, and Ludwig Müller was appointed as the bishop of that church, and he served as the bishop of the official German church from that day, or maybe a week thereafter, until he committed suicide at the end of World War II. That every soldier in the German army had a belt buckle that said, Gott mit uns, that Hitler declared a new Christianity, that he declared that Germany was a Christian nation, that Hitler had merged church and state. And in fact, many of his persecutions of the Catholic Church grew out of the fact that this merger of church and state that happened in Germany was with a Protestant church. In fact, the official position, this is from the German, this is the Constitution, rewritten in 1933, and I quote, "At a time in which our German people are experiencing a great historical new era through the grace of God, the new German state church federates into a solemn league all denominations that stem from the Reformation," it's going all the way back to Martin Luther, in other words, all the Protestant, with the exception of the Church of England, right? All the Protestant churches, "and stand equally legitimately side by side and thereby bear witness to one body and one spirit, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all of us who is above all and through all and in all," end quote. That's from Article 3. Article 4, Section 4, Article 5 of the new Constitution further established the head of the new German church, state church, with the title of Reich Bishop. And Ludwig Müller, as I said, got this job. So here is Scalia in a synagogue having the chutzpah to say it was the separation of church and state that led to the Holocaust. talk about conservatives rewriting history. I'm just right there with James Madison. James Madison just, you know, he just laid it out so eloquently. Here's a quote. This is July 10th, 1822, a letter that he wrote to Edward Livingston, a friend of his. He said, "We are teaching the world the great truth that governments do better without kings and nobles than with them. The merit will be doubled by the other lesson we're teaching the world. The religion flourishes in greater purity without than with the aid of government." In the same letter, he added, "I have no doubt that every new example will succeed, as every past one has done, in showing that religion and government will both exist in greater purity the less they are mixed together." You see, I'm one of those strange liberals who's actually all in favor of religion, although I acknowledge that organized religion has been as much a force for evil as for good in the world very often. A lot of horrible things have been done in the name of organized religion. I still know from my own personal experience that there is something real and good in religion, let's say in spirituality anyway. But I also think that it must be protected from the contamination of the state. And that was Madison's point. And then he goes on, he says, "Is the appointment of chaplains to the two houses of Congress consistent with the Constitution with a pure principle of religious freedom?" Madison asked this in 1820. And then his own answer to his own question, "In the strictness, the answer on both points must be in the negative." In other words, no. "The establishment of the chaplainship to Congress is a palpable violation of equal rights as well as of constitutional principles," said Madison. He goes on, "If religion consists in voluntary acts of individuals, singly or voluntarily associated, and it be proper that public functionaries as well as their constituents should discharge their religious duties, let them, like their constituents, do so at their own expense. How small a contribution from each member of Congress would suffice for the purpose? How just would it be in its principle?" And he puts an exclamation mark at the end of that sentence, which is a very rare thing for James Madison. "How noble in its exemplary sacrifice to the genius of the Constitution and the divine right of conscience!" Another exclamation mark. "Why should the expense of a religious worship be allowed for the legislature be paid by the public more than for the executive or judiciary branch of the government?" Madison was saying, you know, they say, the founders, they all had, well, they did have a chaplain. Madison didn't like it. He couldn't get it changed. He didn't like it. We don't want government contaminated by religion. We don't want religion contaminated by government. Both have their appropriate places. Brian in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Our number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for schooling that guy. It's always a treat to listen to you lay down your thing, buddy.
Well, what was disappointing to me, frankly, was, I mean, on his website, they talk about, you know, using the Constitution to teach the light of Christ. And, you know, I call him on it, and he just kind of wiggles away from it. I mean, why don't they just, like, be upfront about what they're teaching? I have no problem with that. I mean, we can just have a discussion about it.
I think it goes into social engineering. And, again, I don't want anybody like that teaching my kid moral values. I have concerns about what's going in schools already. I have a 13-year-old daughter who they're trying to teach that interracial marriages and relationships are socially acceptable. Not that I have anything against any other person. I'm not better than any other person. I'm trying to point out that we are culturally different, and there are differences in our backgrounds, our beliefs, our values, how we've been raised.
Well, that's an interesting one.
They're trying to erase all this.
Yes.
As well, at the same time, you got Marines inside our school trying to recruit my 17-year-old boy to go fight in Iraq right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is for school? Our kids are being turned out unprepared for life, yet they want to socially engineer them and get them to think the way the establishment wants them to think. And this is an assault on our kids.
Yeah. Now let's go back. I don't disagree with you, Brian, but let's go back to your earlier point. You're suggesting that now there's a lot of folks who would say, and I'm one of them, that teaching kids that tolerance of interracial marriage is a good thing is a good thing. That people who are intolerant of interracial relationships are bigots. And so I guess I'm calling you a bigot. How do you defend yourself against that?
Tom, I'm not a bigot, and again, I stated that I do not feel that I'm above anybody else.
Right.
What I'm trying to do is point out the realities of the world to my child by saying, socially, it's still not accepted.
Oh, in other words, what you're saying is if you have an interracial relationship, you're going to have a much more difficult time in the world, in society, than if you don't have an interracial relationship. And that's simply a reality. There's no judgment associated with that. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that's exactly what I'm saying. Also, I'm saying each person comes from a completely different background.
Yeah.
So we have a different history. We have different ideology. We have a different culture. And those are things that ought to be recognized also.
Yeah, that's all true, but that goes beyond race. I mean, you know, that's true of just every family. Marriage is about compromise and learning to work things out and finding things that are mutual and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, whether people are different races, different religions, or simply, you know, one family likes chicken and the other one likes pork. I mean, people are idiosyncratic.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, it's not that I don't want my children to have friends across the whole spectrum. I do. Again, they really have to be balanced and fairly taught, not just tolerance is acceptable and blind your eyes to all the other effects of that throughout society. I mean, they have to be realistically taught, not just programmed.
Well, okay. Good point, Brian. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And I would point out a very good friend of mine is a black woman who's married to a white man, and when they went on their honeymoon, the woman at the airline counter, now this woman is savvy. She travels a lot. She knows what she's doing. And she had made the reservations and made sure that they were sitting together. The woman at the airline counter moved them to separate seats in different parts of the airplane. And when she, you know, and it was like this series of things when they went on their honeymoon, of, you know, just little people getting their little digs in at them. So there is the reality of that, unfortunately, in our society. And yet, at the same time, these two people are very much in love. They've just had their second child. They're wonderful folks. They've got beautiful kids. And, you know, they've said, well, you know, it's going to be a little tough being an interracial couple, but we love each other and we're going to push through it. It's worth it. And I salute them for that, I have to say. John in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just had a little historical point. You were talking about in 33 when the Hitler started his rampage?
July 17th. July 14th.
Belt buckles that said, Gott mit uns.
Yeah.
Well, they also had them in World War One too, because I have one sitting in my hand right here that my grandfather gave me from World War One, and that was the only war he was in. And I have a lot of his treasures from the German.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, Germany has a long history of being.
But it didn't just start when Hitler started. They had that on their belt buckles in World War One.
Oh, I
just wanted to clarify that and let your listeners know that.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, John.
You bet.
I appreciate it. John's, you know, may well be absolutely right. It's certainly, but in World War One. You didn't have the Kaiser declaring a new Christianity. I lived in Germany for a year. I'm speaking from some level of knowledge of this stuff, and I'm telling you, Hitler used Christianity. He played Christianity like a violin. A good friend of mine, I shouldn't give his last name, but a good friend of mine who is now, he must be pushing 80. He was 16 when Hitler went down when the Nazis went down. And he was very high up in the German youth movement. You know, I mean, very high up, as a kid can get, right? You know, it's like being a Boy Scout, you know, working your way up to being an Eagle Scout kind of thing. He was like the Eagle Scout in the Hitler Youth. And the Hitler Youth was all about Christianity. I mean, it was a major component of it. And Horst has told me just wild stories about, you know, all this stuff. And again, it's not to indict Christianity. As speaking as a Christian, I don't have a problem with Christianity. What I do have a problem with is merging any religion into any state. I think that then it becomes problematic. Then you have the possibility of the religion being corrupted by the power and money of the state, and the state being corrupted by the goals of the religion, the particularly evangelical religions. Tim in Hartford, Connecticut on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Tim?
Well, still out here fighting for the stolen election, but I wanted to talk about the creeping influence of religion. I have a lot of friends who've been so turned off by government's role in religion that they've almost gone completely overboard and has become atheist. And
yeah, this is the backlash is the downside of this. I mean, people see these folks out here who are just like, you know, over the top. Falwell going on TV saying that 9/11 was because God hates America because we allow homosexuals, and they go, well, if that's Christianity, I don't want any part of it. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy.
Well, in my small town, I'm not really in Hartford itself, but right outside of Hartford. We've got a post office that is run by a religious group that has religious paraphernalia there in their display window. It's essentially a post office, and it's right in the downtown of the town. And, of course, tomorrow I'm faced with the dilemma of the Christmas pageant in the middle of town with all the city officials there. And I've been trying to tell people in kind of a quiet way, I'm not necessarily against your services and that sort of thing here, but we just have to be kind of careful and, you know, look at these things from a perspective, because we do have a large Jewish population here in our town, and we have a lot of people. I'm a Unitarian. I don't mind someone, you know, engaging in this process, but having the official government stamp of approval on these things, it makes me a little uneasy, but I don't want to come off as some sort of, you know, anti-religion, bad guy.
Well said, Tim. And it's. I remember when I was a kid growing up, a friend of mine who lived actually his house right behind our house. He was Jewish, and we were like, you know, 8 years old, and we were doing all this Christmas stuff. And I know he was extremely uncomfortable with it. It was, of course, it was a different time. But anyhow, Tim, thanks for the call. 10 minutes before the hour. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international agreement marks a small step toward protecting a fearsome fish. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Great white sharks frighten a lot of people, but people scare sharks even more. Commercial fishing kills a lot of sharks all over the world, and in some places this pressure is excessive. But the global trade in shark meat will now be under closer scrutiny. New rules for selling it are now part of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. George Burgess is a shark expert with the University of Florida, and he's active in shark conservation. He says the international agreement provides different levels of protection to endangered species. The action on white sharks is listed in Appendix 2, and it requires monitoring the trade in shark fins and shark meat.
Some might say, well, so what? We're not a whole lot better off than what we are. White sharks are still dying, fins are still being moved from point A to point B. But the fact of the matter is getting the species listed on Appendix 2 is a first step, and a very significant first step. It puts the animal under a magnifying glass, so any trade in this animal now will have to be monitored very carefully and documented, and so we'll get a much better indication of exactly how much is moving around.
Some parts of the international agreement specifically prohibit trade in some species. The recent action on white sharks does not do that, but Burgess says it's still a great step forward.
Shark populations are on decline in most areas of the world as a result of overfishing and habitat loss, and so getting the largest of the predatory sharks, the white shark, aboard Appendix 2 is a real plus. And so hopefully this will put the plight of sharks worldwide on the front page.
The action on white sharks came during a meeting of international delegates in October. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. It don't matter anyhow.
And welcome back. No use to sit and wonder. Discussion in the chat room here about whether Jerry Falwell is a master at baiting his debate opponents. Don't say it fast three times. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. John in Boston on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Tom, how you doing?
I'm great. What's up, John?
You have a great program as usual.
Thank you.
I just wanted to hone in on this interracial question that you had or someone brought up.
Yeah, it was, Brian in Grand Rapids.
Right. Okay. Well, according to the Census Bureau, in 1990, there were 7 million interracial children. And in the year 2000... there were 12 million interracial children. According to them, Census Bureau, the fastest growing group of any Americans are interracial children.
That's interesting.
So, you know, what is the...
Of course, this is where statistics get funny. I mean, it's like here in Vermont, every now and then, we are the highest Ritalin use in the nation, or the state that has the lowest Ritalin use in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because there's only 600,000 people in the whole state. So one person does something, and boom, it throws the statistics, you know, compared to a state like California with 34 million people.
Right.
So it may be that that's a small group to begin with. So if it grows a little bit, then in terms of percentage, you have a huge growth. But
right, exactly. But, you know, the people that you see, the interracial couples, mm-hmm. I mean, they're doing what they want. They're not being forced to do anything. They know what the society is all about in this country, and they choose to do what they want, so they can't be hurting anybody.
I say God bless them. I mean, that was my point. I'm hoping that it was either Brian or John, I forget which one, who had made the comment, but I'm hoping that his comment was that he wants his kids to know that society is going to make it rough if you have that kind of relationship, but... you know, if that's the kind of relationship you choose, good luck and God bless.
Right, exactly. You know, another thing, too, that it's always been brushed over, and that was the approximate 10 million Amerasian children from Vietnam that our servicemen fathered.
Yeah.
They said 8 out of every 10 American servicemen in Vietnam that served during the 11-year course of the war has a child.
Wow.
So what happened? Where are our kids?
Yeah.
You know? Bring them home.
Well, yeah, and I know some of those kids have actually been repatriated. They've been brought or whatever the word, the appropriate word is, they've been brought back. You know, people have tracked them down, and there have been some kind of sweet stories about that. But
keep up the good work, Tom.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. But it's got to have really changed the face of Vietnam. Any time an army goes through, and this is something that you see. Well, we started the program out 2 hours ago talking about the movie Alexander. You know, any time an army comes through a country, they leave remnants, as it were. And you can just see that as you travel around the world and see how these things have you know, how different folks have moved around in different areas. That's just life, I guess. Anyhow, this is Tom Hartman with you. Talk radio for the rest of us. Every day, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. Right here.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The right of U.S. workers to organize was dealt a major blow today as the National Labor Relations Board ruled temporary workers will no longer be able to collectively bargain with their permanent status co-workers. The three Bush-appointed NLRB members argued that temporary employees are different than permanent workers. The two dissenting board members said this essentially puts the right to collectively bargain in the employer's hands, excluding a growing temp workforce from the benefits of union representation. The 2.5 million temp workers in the U.S. will now only be allowed to organize if both their temporary agency and the company where they work approve, something that union organizers believe is almost impossible to achieve.
Florida, no. Wisconsin, yes. We're sick of paying more for less.
About 250, mostly union demonstrators, gathered at Wisconsin State Elections Board to protest a $12 million contract with Accenture. That's the corporation that handled Florida's botched felon voter purge list. This contract is to develop a voter registration list for Wisconsin. Carol Wydell is a Wisconsin State employee and one of the protest organizers. She says one union has already filed a formal appeal against this Accenture contract.
One union, the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council, has filed an appeal of that contract. I think the legislature needs to pay attention to the fact that they have allowed agencies to sign these contracts, but you don't sign a contract for millions of dollars without even ever once taking into account, is it cheaper? Is it better? They never even ask that question.
Jim Kavanaugh of Wisconsin's South Central Labor Federation says state workers can do this work and Wisconsin should not use Accenture to privatize its voter list.
Well, we're out here today to protest, number one, this exorbitant contract with a company that has a questionable reputation, but also the whole process by which the state tends to contract out work while at the same time they are cutting back state employees who could do that same work much more inexpensively.
Phyllis Hasbrook of the No Stolen Elections Coalition told the protesters that turning over state voter lists to Accenture endangers democracy.
We're especially concerned with the way that computer systems could be used and have been used for electoral fraud. We will not accept this attempt to privatize our elections.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The steep rise in health care costs is making more and more Americans turn down benefits. Barely half of the employees who are offered employer-based health care plans opt to buy in. Economists blame the decrease on the trend of shifting more and more costs to the worker. In 1999, employees paid on average $169 per month for family coverage. Now they pay on average $464 per month.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
Who was one of the biggest winners on November 2nd? Some bloke named Jerry Jones. He ran a $5 million ad blitz in Arlington, Texas to win a vote that will put $325 million of government money into his own pocket. Jerry's the billionaire owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and the vote was to get taxpayers to build a luxury sports palace for his private business. He's just one of the billionaire sports owners across America who profess to love free enterprise, but shamelessly wallow in corporate welfare. Local politicians, eager to please these moneyed power brokers, back their billionaire boondoggles, even as basic needs in their cities go begging. Take New York City, where both Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Governor George Pataki have rushed to the aid of Robert Wood Johnson IV, known as Woody to his pals and political cronies. Woody is the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune, a backer of various far-right-wing causes, one of the top Republican donors in the country, and owner of the New York Jets. It's in this latter capacity that Woody, a fervent free enterpriser, wants a government handout. He says his team must have a new stadium to play in, and both Bloomberg and Pataki are there for him. They're offering $600 million from New York taxpayers to build poor Woody a privileged for-profit playground on a stretch of Manhattan's most valuable land. These are the same two political leaders who keep shortchanging New York school kids, claiming there's just no money to meet their needs. 94% of the city's schools have no athletic fields, and more than half have no playgrounds for the kids. Forget playgrounds. The kids' schools are dangerously dilapidated. Parents and teachers have to chip in to buy the most basic classroom supplies, and some school bathrooms don't even have toilet paper. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a modest proposal. Not another dime in welfare for billionaires until every school is fully stocked with toilet paper.
Your dog gets your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, this advertisement is too hot to touch, apparently. CBS and NBC saying, no, don't think we want to run this ad. This is fascinating. Welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. CBS and NBC refusing to produce an ad put together by a religious group. You may say, oh, wait a minute, what is it, an ad saying that you know, quoting Falwell and Robertson, that 9/11 was God's punishment for our allowing homosexuality in our civilization? No, actually, that wasn't it. The ad shows bouncers turning away a variety of people at the door of a church. Ethnic minorities, two men who may be a homosexual couple. The announcer over this, as they're showing this footage in this commercial, of people walking up to the door of this church and these bouncers, like, you know, bar bouncers, sitting there going, oh, you can't come in, you have to leave, turning away people who are different races, different, obviously different religions, and apparently gay. The announcer says, and I quote, here's the script, "Jesus doesn't turn people away, neither do we. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here." It's from the United Church of Christ. And in the letter to the United Church of Christ, CBS is refusing to air the advertisement because the commercial touches on the exclusion of gay couples and other minority groups by other individuals and organizations, end quote. Also, CBS found the ad unacceptable because, quote, the executive branch, that being the president of the United States, has recently proposed a constitutional amendment to define marriage as a union between a man and a woman, end quote. In other words, the president is advocating bigotry, and so we're not going to allow you to run an ad saying you're not a bigot. Also, CBS found the, also NBC found the ad too controversial. The ad has been accepted and will run on a number of networks, including ABC Family, AMC, BET, Discovery, Fox, Hallmark History, Nick at Night, TBS, TNT, Travel, and TV Land. This is something worth saying something about, in my opinion. Go to CBS.com or NBC.com and see if there's some, I'm sure that there's, you know, communicate with us links that have their telephone number. You can call their headquarters or send them an email and say, now let me get this straight. You guys don't want to run an ad from a church that says, Jesus doesn't turn away people, neither do we. Please come to our church. You don't want to run that ad? Why? This is amazing. Well, Tom Ridge resigned yesterday. This also from the Progress Report today, the Center for American Progress. Nice summary of the day's events they put together this particular day. And it pointed out that he's leaving. He's saying, you know, everything is fine and he's handled all these. Sort of like Ashcroft. You remember when Ashcroft resigned and he said, I've completed the job I came to do, the mission that I came to do? It's like, say what? I mean, we still have some First Amendment rights of free speech, John. John Ashcroft, the guy who couldn't beat a dead man in an election. Probably the most dysfunctional attorney general this country has ever had. Well, right up there with John Mitchell, anyway. I guess I'm dating myself. In any case, the Bush administration has not put together an effective terror watch list. As the Baltimore Sun reports, 3 years after the attacks that prompted them, these watch lists still are not reliable, and the master terror list, a consolidation of the smaller lists ordered by the president and by Congress, still does not exist. There's no blanket policy on ensuring privacy, embarrassing misidentifications. You'll recall Teddy Kennedy couldn't get on airplanes for a while because he was on the list. I continue to think that somebody in the Department of Homeland Security put him on there as a joke. Come on, a terrorist named Teddy Kennedy? Maybe they thought it was somebody from the Irish Republican Army. It struck me as odd. According to the National Fire Protection Association, at least two-thirds of the nation's fire departments are understaffed. So this is the consequence of having people in charge of your government who don't believe in government. Having people in charge of the government who think that the only role of government is to perpetuate their personal power and to help make their wealthy friends wealthier. So you privatize everything, you give out contracts to big corporations, they give you campaign donations, you then can win elections, you maintain political power. But what about serving the people? What happened to, as to paraphrase Lincoln, a government of, by, and for we the people? What happened to making sure that our infrastructure is strong, that our schools are good, that our that people have the right to life, liberty, and frankly, enough time and the ability to pursue happiness? A radical idea, by the way. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The original phrase, of course, John Locke wrote back in the late 1600s in his second treatise on government, which got became very notorious in, with his 1724 publication. But in any case, he wrote life, liberty, and the right to property. And Jefferson changed that with the agreement of Adams and Franklin and George Mason. Changed that, or was it John Jay, one or the other, and changed that to say life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The word happiness had never before appeared in the founding document of a nation. Because these guys actually had this strange notion that government, instead of being an oppressive force, if it was administered of, by, and for we the people, if we controlled our government, if we owned our government, that we could do something unique and different that had never been done before. We could create a nation where the average person actually had the ability, that had the time, had the skills to pursue happiness, that they had an education, that they lived in safety and comfort, that there was, you know, they work hard and play by the rules. And if they do that, then they earn enough that they can put their kids through school, they can pay for college, they can, or, you know, Jefferson thought college should be free. That's why he started the Free University of Virginia, which I am quite certain is no longer free. But nonetheless, I think all of that, all of the free universities around the country ended when Reagan ended it at the University of California. I think that was the last one to bite the dust. It was ironic that Reagan did that. So, anyhow, here's this idea that when we pay taxes, what we're doing is we are funding the society in which we live. We're, you know, it's the price of admission to civil society. So, under the SAFER Act, which is Staffing for Adequate Fire and Emergency Response, I love it how they always have to come up with an acronym. Anyhow, under the SAFER Act, Congress authorized $7.6 billion over 7 years to improve fire department funding, but President Bush, quote, didn't request any money for the program in his 2005 budget, end quote. So this the International Association of Chiefs of Police has gotten into the act. The fire guys are really upset, the fire department folks. The NFPA, the National Fire Protection Association, say Congress authorized $7.6 billion and Bush puts together a budget, not one penny. Not one penny for firefighters. Nope, sorry. He'll have his picture taken with him in New York City, but after that, good luck, guys, you're on your own. Likewise, the International Association of Chiefs of Police said last month that, quote, cuts by the administration in federal aid to local police agencies have left the nation more vulnerable than ever to public safety threats, pushing the local agencies to the breaking point, end quote. All this so that we can have tax cuts for billionaires, so that the heirs to the Walton family sitting around their pools can see checks that are much, much larger when they arrive. And Bush now has said that he's as a high priority to make sure that the only people who pay taxes in America are those who work for a living, that anybody who earns their income, and I use the word earns advisedly, yes, there is probably some intellectual horsepower involved, although in many cases they just hand it over to an advisor who takes a piece of the action. But anybody who earns their income sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive doesn't have to pay any taxes at all. It's called the ownership society. The ownership class, that is that class of people in the United States who derive their income through their ownership of wealth, of capital, of stock, the ownership class will no longer have to pay any taxes at all. They will own our society, thus the ownership society. What a great idea, huh? If you're a millionaire. Ports are still a problem. Tom Ridge didn't do anything about that either. The Bush administration has severely underfunded maritime security. Because of the massive volume of containers that arrive every day, the problem may seem daunting, but retired Coast Guard Commander Stephen Flynn points out it's really just a matter of priorities. He says for the cost of two F-22 fighter jets and 3 days of combat in Iraq, the entire nation's ports could be secured against terror. But we ain't going to do it. We got to provide those tax cuts for the Walton family. Sorry. Rail security. You know that right now there are railroad cars going through the center of Washington, D.C., not to mention every other city in America, carrying deadly toxic materials. Railroad cars that if they got flipped off the rail, if there was an accident and they derailed, or if, God forbid, somebody put some dynamite by the tracks and they got derailed, could release poison clouds that could kill millions. Well, certainly hundreds of thousands. Bush's 2005 budget for rail security is $100 million, equal to what the U.S. spends on 8 typical hours in Iraq, and far short of the billions experts say are needed. In addition, the administration has not forced the rail industry to safeguard shipments of hazardous materials. The consequence of that decision was on display last week when rail executives told a Washington, D.C. City Council hearing that, quote, this is from the rail executives, quote, despite concern about the danger of a terrorist attack, we have not been ordered to stop running cargoes of ultra-hazardous toxic chemicals through the capital, end quote. I'm telling you, these are the guys who sat around for 9 months after they came into office in 2000 and did nothing. Dick Cheney was put in charge of the counterterrorism task force because Bill Clinton and Al Gore and company said, hey, look out, Bin Laden's coming to get you. And Dick Cheney's counterterrorism task force did not meet one time before 9/11. Condi Rice had over 100 meetings before 9/11. Only two of them was the subject of terrorism even brought up. These are the folks who let 9/11 happen. And now, in order to, in the rush falling all over themselves to give more tax cuts to more millionaires, they're setting up to let it happen again. Somebody should wake them up. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment and referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
We were born before the wind, also younger than the sun.
Welcome back.
Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sail into the mystic.
What a remark. You know, whenever I hear him sing that, it actually reminds me of Ben Franklin's, one of his autobiographies. Of course, there's the official autobiography that he wrote, but he also wrote a book called, as I recall, Into the Mystery. It's been a lot of years since I read it. And I used to think that that's what Van Morrison was saying. He's not. He's saying Into the Mystic, I guess, but... It just always reminded me of Ben Franklin. I like it. Anyhow, 1-866. It's also a toll-free number. 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number. If you're outside the United States, you'd like to call, you can call direct into our main line, which is 1-802-229-2288. George W., protecting the United States, well, protecting us from bioweapons. I haven't seen any evidence of it. He can't protect us from the flu. So are we ready for bioweapons? I think not. Let's take a couple of calls here. Jim in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, Tom, it's good to hear you on the radio. It's a little bit different point of view.
Okay.
Are you there?
I am.
Okay, I would like to bring up a couple of points. I'm going to go to the interracial marriage first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a white man. I was married to a black woman for 13 years. I've been divorced. I have two sons,
mm-hmm.
one in the military, a sergeant in the Marine Corps in Iraq who is biracial,
mm-hmm.
and another one between both of them between 26 and 30 years old. So mm-hmm. I speak from a little bit of experience.
Yes, sir.
And I will tell you this, that you will experience prejudice not only from liberal, you can expect it from conservative as well. You can expect it from black, and you can expect it from white.
This is what I've learned from my friend who I used to work with at CompuServe, who is a black woman who married a white man, and I was frankly shocked by the stories that she tells. I mean, to this day, because I thought that we had gotten past that in the United States. Obviously, we haven't. And she lives in a fairly large city, and you're absolutely right. It's unfortunate.
Well, it is, but I can tell you this much, that it diminishes every minute, and people are more accepting to some degree, so there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. Well, that's good
news. Praise God that we'll get that far.
There you go, Jim.
And the other question I'd like to bring up to you is, have you ever heard of a man by the name of Haim Solomon?
I have not.
Well, Haim Solomon, actually, in reference to who wrote the Constitution, was the person that actually did the framework of it. He also was the person that gave George Washington 600,000 British pounds sterling to start the American Revolution.
Oh, that's
he then helped bring Lafayette, and when another $3.5 million was needed, he went to the Austrian Rothschilds in order to gain further financing for the revolution.
Is this part of the it's the Masons conspiracy theory, or is this the
it's the
Jews conspiracy theory?
Or? No, this is truth.
Okay.
Absolute truth. There's actually a postage stamp to Haim Solomon, if you wish to investigate it.
Yeah. Is it Haim?
He was never repaid for any of the money that he ever gave to him.
Interesting. And is it Haim, like C-H-A-I-M?
Yeah, it's more
like Haim?
H-I-M-A-N, I think it is. And I think the last name is spelled S-A-L-M-O-N.
Uh-huh.
More like Salomon than Solomon. But
yeah.
Pronounced Solomon.
Okay.
The biggest references that you can probably find to it will be in regards to the postage stamp, and there is some history there.
Mm-hmm.
He was very instrumental and a good friend of George Washington's. He did pen a great deal of the work from the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
and there was one other thing I was trying to think of here that I wanted to say to you about it, and that had to do with the fact that he enlisted about 25% of the original Revolutionary Army under George Washington, which was Jewish.
Fascinating. Well, I'll check that out. I know there were substantial Jewish communities in New York and Delaware by that time. And
yes, there were.
Yeah.
And
so,
in addition to that, if you look on the back of a dollar bill, you'll find that George Herbert Walker Bush actually made reference to the design. Haim Solomon was the one that drew the actual Great Seal of the United States.
Interesting.
And just so everybody realizes, they've been carrying Jewish money around for a long time.
Oh, my.
If you look above the head of the eagle.
Jim, I gotta end it there. We're out of time. I'm sorry. Thanks for the call, though. 29 minutes past the hour. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The right of U.S. workers to organize was dealt a major blow today as the National Labor Relations Board ruled temporary workers will no longer be able to collectively bargain with their permanent status co-workers. The three Bush-appointed NLRB members argued that temporary employees are different than permanent workers. The two dissenting board members said this essentially puts the right to collectively bargain in the employer's hands, excluding a growing temp workforce from the benefits of union representation. The 2.5 million temp workers in the U.S. will now only be allowed to organize if both their temporary agency and the company where they work approve, something that union organizers believe is almost impossible to achieve.
Florida, no. Wisconsin, yes. We're sick of paying more for less.
About 250, mostly union demonstrators, gathered at Wisconsin State Elections Board to protest a $12 million contract with Accenture. That's the corporation that handled Florida's botched felon voter purge list. This contract is to develop a voter registration list for Wisconsin. Carol Wydell is a Wisconsin State employee and one of the protest organizers. She says one union has already filed a formal appeal against this Accenture contract.
One union, the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council, has filed an appeal of that contract. I think the legislature needs to pay attention to the fact that they have allowed agencies to sign these contracts, but you don't sign a contract for millions of dollars without even ever once taking into account, is it cheaper? Is it better? They never even ask that question.
Jim Kavanaugh of Wisconsin's South Central Labor Federation says state workers can do this work and Wisconsin should not use Accenture to privatize its voter list.
Well, we're out here today to protest, number one, this exorbitant contract with a company that has a questionable reputation, but also the whole process by which the state tends to contract out work while at the same time they are cutting back state employees who could do that that same work much more inexpensively.
Phyllis Hasbrook of the No Stolen Elections Coalition told the protesters that turning over state voter lists to Accenture endangers democracy.
We're especially concerned with the way that computer systems could be used and have been used for electoral fraud. We will not accept this attempt to privatize our elections.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The steep rise in health care costs is making more and more Americans turn down benefits. Barely half of the employees who are offered employer-based health care plans opt to buy in. Economists blame the decrease on the trend of shifting more and more costs to the worker. In 1999, employees paid on average $169 per month for family coverage. Now they pay on average $464 per month.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
There's no easy walk to freedom. No easy walk to freedom. Keep on walking and you shall be free. That's how
people are going to be walking on Saturday in Columbus, Ohio at the state capitol. 1 o'clock, Reverend Jesse Jackson is going to be there and others. If you're in the Ohio area, maybe worth checking out. It'll be interesting to see how much coverage it gets from the mainstream media, as it were, both before and after and during and all that kind of thing. Anyhow, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Services with us, our bureau chief in Washington, D.C., right?
I feel like all I give you is bad news.
Oh, really? Well, you know, it's grist for the mill, Ellen. It's just
apparently
grist for the mill.
They are trying to think about cutting entitlement spending to reduce the deficits. Medicare is the most likely target, and now they're thinking of going with payments to hospitals. And they said it's basically easier to cut payments to doctors and hospitals than to other providers. And other providers than it is to cut beneficiaries.
So in other words, the cuts happen in a way that you don't, that the average person doesn't realize the cuts have happened until they actually need them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the hospital just says, well, you know, Medicare didn't pay for this.
Right, so you pay us. And so it's a more invisible way of sticking it to us.
Pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. Where did you get this from?
That was actually talked about yesterday at an event at the Galen Institute in Washington.
Huh. Interesting.
Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah.
That's that. The other thing that, I guess this isn't bad news, but it's interesting news. Senator Corzine says that he is definitely probably running for governor. That means that if he wins, he can appoint the successor, obviously a Democrat. If he loses, then he will have trouble defending his own Senate seat.
Hmm. Yeah. So he's the Democratic senator from New Jersey.
That's right.
And
remember, he kind of bought the seat.
Yeah.
Very,
yeah.
Very wealthy guy. Spent $80 million.
That's right. Yeah. Is he, is he any good? I mean, frankly, I don't know much about John Corzine other than that he's there and he's a Democrat. I mean, and that he basically bought his seat, and which makes me suspicious.
But he's been a pretty good liberal senator, honestly.
He has been.
So, you got to take what you can take.
There you go. Okay.
Couple other things that now Bush was in Canada this morning, and he talked about how there's going to be cooperation on the terror war, even if they don't agree on other issues. So that's it. And he said sometimes even the closest friends disagree, but he has really tried to, kiss up and make up, so to speak.
Now, here's a question for you, Ellen, about the media. We live here just, I'm 2 hours south of Montreal here in central Vermont, and so we get Canadian television. And last night I watched the CBC news instead of any of the network news, and they spent at least half of the news report that was about George W. Bush on the protests. the thousands of people who showed up. They interviewed marchers. They showed the signs. They showed people, you know, they had a symbolic toppling of the statue. I guess maybe that was this morning.
Right.
I saw that in the newspaper. But I didn't see
but
that.
But we're not getting any of that here.
Yeah, I didn't see the network news last night. Did none of that showed up on CBS, ABC,
that
NBC?
I saw, but I'm not a big fan of network news. So.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Because there was a big that was the lead story in Canada was how many Canadians came out to protest this guy, and the fact that they kept the protesters.
And you know what's
so
interesting though, the right wing hosts have said that there have been almost no protests.
Well, right. That's interesting because the other thing that they pointed out in the Canadian news was that they kept the protesters so far away from the route of Bush's travel that he could not actually see them. They were
that is standard material.
Yeah, in most cases they were stopped at least 2 blocks away from where his car was going by. So he could have gone from the airport all the way to the Parliament building or wherever it was that he was and not even known that there were thousands of people in the streets.
Pretty amazing,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, we had a caller into the program yesterday from Montreal who listens on the web, and she said that, or maybe it was Sirius Satellite, I'm not sure, and she said that she was had to get off the phone because she and a whole bunch of her friends were getting on the bus to go to Montreal to join the protests, and that all over Canada, people were flying into Halifax and Montreal for these protests. And it's like the Woodstock thing, you know, it's like everybody's going. And so that's why I watched the CBC News last night, and it is a big deal. So.
Well, and it is interesting that, you know, again, the word is, oh, they love him there. And, you know, and then he made this thing about he was glad to people waving with all 5 fingers. And he made a joke of that.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Please, please, please.
Yep. Well, it can only get better, right?
It can only get better. Also, the only other good news is that this new omnibus appropriations bill that they have now sort of redone a little bit, and not a lot. There's still enough pork in there to feed the country several times over.
Yeah.
And they are now apparently going to put in the $100 million that was requested to get faster methods of getting flu vaccine.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Congratulations. That only took them not having enough one time before they woke up to that.
Yeah, it's a beginning. It's just a beginning. I mean, but no, it's good. Okay, Ellen Ratner, thank you so much for the report.
You're
today
very welcome.
From the Talk Radio News Service, and
okay,
we will talk to you tomorrow. Okay, thanks. Thanks so much, Ellen. 21 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you would like to call in. Brian in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Wish I was in Canada to give Bush the one-finger salute, but
Now, Brian, we must be respectful of the office of the presidency. I actually believe that. I think it's important that we respect the office of the presidency, even if we criticize the behavior of the man who is the president, that we have to separate the two.
All right, I'll give you that. But I was really calling on, in the past week, I've read 8 separate stories, all from The Guardian and Bloomberg and some Russian newspapers, San Francisco Chronicle, and they've all been on the dropping dollar. And this is obviously a sign of an upcoming depression. And I was just wondering, what happened in 1929? Was it just like one day people woke up and boom, it was there? Or what happened? And is it going to happen again? And, you know?
Yeah, that's frankly a question that I don't know the answer to, Brian. I've read a fair amount of history about 1929, but I don't know what was the tipping point.
What broke the camel's back?
Yeah, I frankly don't know. And now you've got me curious. I'll go looking for that because maybe one of our listeners knows and can call in and tell us. You know, was it some little hiccup in the RCA stock? RCA was largely fueling the stock market boom, by the way. That one corporation was doing to the stock market in the 20s what the entire dot-com industry was doing to the stock market in the 90s.
Wow.
And it was because of radio, because of the advent of radio. And of course, speculation, because people could buy on margin. But, you know, whether it was something that had to do with that or something else, I don't know. I'll find out, though.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County. Hey, Dave, you normally listen on KGOE, right?
Yes, I normally
do.
And
their transmitter. Yeah, their transmitter blew up this weekend. We got a call from Tom, the program director there, and Tom Seaborn, and he said they're going to have the station back up tomorrow, but
I'm a terribly suspicious man.
Yeah, well, it's funny because in the chat room, I think it was Monday, that somebody said the KGOE is off the air. We've got at least one listener from KGOE who hangs on the chat room. And I said, well, I wonder what Dave will have to say about that. So.
Well, only that I'm suspicious. But I just received email, and I was wondering if you're aware of this. It's asking us to contact our senator and ask our senator to support members of the House that are calling for throwing the election out, repeal of the election. It's something of a deja vu when Senator or then Vice President Gore would not permit one senator to vote. I wonder, were you aware that they were attempting that again?
You mean that members of the House are trying to find a senator to stand up and contest the election when the Electoral College is red?
Right, it's happening again, and we're being asked to send messages to our senator.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot, frankly, to get any senator to say that, and the senator who would have to say it, frankly, I think would be John Kerry. If John Kerry, because he's a member of the Senate, just like Al Gore was the president of the Senate, if the guy who is the candidate who has the ability to make the challenge doesn't make the challenge, then I would think it would be bad form, if nothing else, for any other member of the Senate to go ahead and make the challenge.
Well, you know, I think Al Gore went on to make it clear that had he had chance to have that over again, it would go a different way. He didn't know how badly it had been stuck to him then.
Well, you know, I've heard that story, but Greg Palast's story broke on December 6th. And that gavel banging didn't happen until I think it was the first week of January, isn't it? That they read the vote, and so I'm not quite buying that. That's my conspiracy theory, Dave. I think that Gore had been very badly intimidated. He had 30 some odd days in a row of mobs standing outside his house in Washington, D.C., with bullhorns shouting obscenities at him. His kids were terrified. That part of the ABC News report where he was interviewed by whoever the interviewing person was, I think it might have been Barbara Walters, they actually chose not to air that, but it's floating around on the Internet. I mean, the transcripts are there on the ABC website.
I thought, well, he initially believed he'd actually lost, and then later evidence convinced him he'd been had.
Yeah, well, I think eventually he got to that, but, I don't know. I don't want to second-guess Al Gore, and I'm not, paranoid or concerned or whatever enough to think that he was part of some conspiracy. I just can't believe that he didn't know what Greg Palast was reporting to the world and the BBC was, Palast was doing a BBC special on this thing. It was published in Salon.com. It wasn't some little weird conspiracy thing. It was out there. People were talking about it. The NAACP was making all kinds of noise about it. They were protesting. They were marching. Did you see Fahrenheit 9/11, Dave?
Yes, of course.
There's that clip in there where member after member of the Congressional Black Caucus comes up and says, "Is there a senator who will please contest this? Because members of the House of Representatives can't block the election of the Electoral College. It requires a senator." And every time they came up and said, "We have evidence that the vote has been hijacked in Florida, that Jeb Bush has stolen the vote, and we just need one senator to put this thing on hold," no senator would do it. And Al Gore would gavel them down and tell them to shut up and go back to their seats.
Absolutely amazing. Carol Braun was a member of the Senate at that time, I believe.
Yeah, she was. She was. But I think that, frankly, because Gore was president of the Senate as in his capacity as vice president, that it would have been probably inappropriate for any senator, just by the decorum, the rules of the Senate, it would have been inappropriate for any senator to speak up if Al Gore didn't. It would have put Al Gore in a very awkward position.
Do you know what effect it would have if the Congress did get a senator to support? Would it put this? What would be the result of it? Would Congress then have a right to? Well, it's still a Republican Congress, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I don't know to what extent this plays out the Tilden-Hayes election. Rutherford B. Hayes ran against, what was it, Samuel Tilden? And Tilden was the Democrat. It looked like the vote had been stolen in Florida, oddly enough. Hayes was going to contest the vote, I mean, Tilden was going to contest the vote and was going to make a big stink about it. And they worked out a deal in Congress. They worked out a deal where if Tilden was going to allow Hayes to become president, this was, 1776, as I recall? If Tilden was going to, or 1777, it would have been the election of 1776. If Tilden was going to allow Hayes to become president, then Hayes had to promise that he would appoint a certain number of Democrats to his cabinet and to all these different positions. There was like big time political payoff that had to be made. And the only reason that the Democrats compromised at that was because this was just 20 years after the Civil War, and they were afraid that if they really, really, truly challenged this thing, that it could lead possibly, you know, it could be another spark that would ignite the powder keg, particularly since these were the four states that were in question were southern states. It was Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, as I recall. Might have been Georgia instead of one of those. But Florida was the one that they were quite sure had been and had been hijacked. And Hayes won by only one electoral vote, as I recall. I mean, it's been a while since... That may give us some lessons if we were to go back and read the history of it. But frankly,
sounds like deja vu all over again, huh?
Yeah, there you go. Now, the more things change, the more they say the same. Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Good to
hear
from you today. And glad you're able to catch us on the web there. And KGOE is going to be back on the air tomorrow, they tell me. So, changing the funding formula under Tom Ridge, just to wrap this stuff up about are we safer now? After 4 years of the Bush administration, the people who sat on their hands for 9 months and allowed 9/11 to happen, even though the intelligence community was running around with its hair on fire, to quote Richard Clark, Dick Cheney never bothered to call together his counterterrorism task force. Condoleezza Rice never bothered to have a meeting, a counterterrorism meeting. In fact, they were all kind of poo-pooing this stuff. Have things really changed that much? Well, under Ridge, large amounts of counterterrorism funding, quote, failed to reach local governments that need it the most, while much of the funding has gone to places that face only minimal threat from terrorism, end quote. Ridge never really lobbied for a more rational distribution of security money, was unable to overcome bureaucratic power structures within Congress, which allowed grants to be doled out as pork. And this is why Wyoming, probably no accident it's Dick Cheney's home state, Wyoming gets more counterterrorism money per capita than New York State. When it was New York, they got hit. And it's not just that it's a little teeny tiny state. It's that, you know, they're actually getting more money. It's not in gross dollars, of course, but on a percentage basis. But it's a significant difference. So, you know, to the extent that there is a threat against the United States, which, frankly, in my opinion, is overblown, I think that there is a danger. But more people die on the highways from drunk drivers every year than probably the danger that terrorism represents. But these guys are flogging it into a great political hysteria. To the extent that it does exist, however, it doesn't seem to me that we're doing any kind of a decent job at all in preparing for it. At least it's certainly not in the budget priorities. 10 minutes before the hour.
My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 per shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international group of scientists say amphibians around the world are in serious trouble. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People have been talking for years about problems that are hitting frogs and other types of amphibians. A group of 500 scientists recently issued a report on the status of these animals after reviewing research from all corners of the globe. They say the outlook is grim. There are more than 5,700 different species of amphibians, and more than 1,800 of them are headed toward extinction. Simon Stewart directed the project, and he says the results were worse than he ever imagined.
When we started this process to do the global amphibian assessment 3.5 years ago, we never dreamt that the situation would be this bad. Not only is it bad with nearly a third of the species at risk of extinction in the world, but also there are a number of species that are deteriorating very rapidly. 435 species that are in very rapid decline around the world. So, yeah, it's unfortunately a very grim picture.
Stewart is a biologist who works for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. He says amphibians are particularly sensitive creatures. They have permeable skin, so they quickly suffer from exposure to chemicals in their surroundings. And Stewart says many species are adapted to small geographic areas. They can't just pick up and move if their habitat is destroyed or if the climate starts to change. The scientific report is called the Global Amphibian Assessment. A news release about it was issued in October, and Stewart says it drew a lot of attention. He says that's one small piece of good news.
The worldwide coverage of this story has just blown our minds, and the desire that people have to learn more about it suggests that more people care than we might think.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've been afraid of changing, 'cause I built my life around you.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We've got about three and a half minutes left in the program. Got a couple of callers on the line. Let's try to take it quickly. Cecilia in Seminole County, Florida on the line first. Hey, Cecilia.
Hi, Tom. Love your show as always.
Thank you.
Did you see the CBS News last night with Dan Rather?
I did not.
Okay. The omnibus spending bill is such a beast, and I'm trying desperately to find some time to wade through it, because every time people find new things, it's just more horrific than the last. There is a report of the wild Mustangs horses, the wild horses out west, and Senator Conrad Burns from Montana wants to eliminate funding for their care because it's so expensive, and he wants to allow mass amounts of these beautiful horses to go to slaughter, and he's claiming that it's just so expensive. Well, here we are spending billions of dollars with, you know, on Iraq and Halliburton's misuse of our public funds and so on and so forth.
And is this senator getting some money from a packing house there?
Oh, probably.
That makes dog food out of these horses?
Yeah. I just, the hypocrisy, it just never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty mind-boggling. Cecilia, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You raise a good point. This is Gene in Hillsborough, Oregon, on the line. Hey, Gene.
Hi, Tom. Just a really quick question, and I just wanted to know, have you ever had a guest on that's critical towards Bush on the right?
That is critical of Bush but is on the right?
Yeah,
we've had, I'm forgetting his name right now, but there's a fellow from Republicans for Environmentalism or something like that. He's been on a couple of times. We had several Republicans on during the election period, you know, during running up to the election, who were concerned that George W. wasn't a real conservative, that he was a radical, a radcon, as they say.
Okay, I was just wondering because I must have missed those.
Yeah, they're hard to find, and they generally don't want to talk. You know, it's hard to get them on the air.
Darn.
But they're out there. I mean, I thought it was interesting that Pat Buchanan's publication, you know, one of his editors had come out and editorialized in favor of John Kerry, saying, you know, George
W.
Yeah,
I noticed
just
that.
Is
I
not a conservative.
After that, it kind of backed off.
Yeah, but you got to read Pat's book. I got to tell you, of you know, all the conservative books out there, Pat's book, What Went Wrong with the Right, or Where the Right Went Wrong, I guess it is. I read that book about 4 months ago, and it's actually brilliant. It's a very good book. Thanks a lot, Gene, for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering it. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org, to the folks in our chat room for showing up, to Ben for our archives at White Rose Society. Boy, what else? Oh, thanks to our sponsors, in particular Small Dog Electronics, and thanks to you. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. And it will be Thursday tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.